Is the Israel-Iran war entering a new uncontrollable phase, and how far is the US prepared to go militarily, politically, and diplomatically? Well, with us on the line to discuss this is Ilan Berman, who is the Senior Vice President of the American Foreign Policy Council. Ilan, thank you so much for chatting with us. Iran's missile strike on the U.S. base in Qatar yesterday. Would you say we are entering a new phase of this war where Washington has effectively become a combatant?
Well, I think it's not clear yet. Certainly, I read the Iranian strike on Qatar, on the U.S. base, on Al Udeid Air Base in Qatar, to be very carefully calibrated. And in order to understand this, you have to understand that the Iranian regime had very, very few good options. It had to retaliate in some fashion to the American strike on Fordo, on the Fordo nuclear facility, on Natanz, on Isfahan, because if it didn't do so, it would send a signal that it was so weak that it was, you know, ripe for the picking in terms of the internal opposition, in terms of, you know, opposition forces. But if it retaliated too forcefully, then it would really drag in the United States as a combatant. And so what you had was something in the middle. You had a strike that was very carefully calibrated. The Iranians telegraphed the move ahead of time. And the end result was something very similar to what happened after the killing of Qasem Soleimani by the Trump administration a few years ago, when Iran attacked an American base, but it sent advance warning to ensure that there were no American casualties and there was really minimal damage. And this was sort of a face-saving measure on the part of the Iranian regime. And the Trump administration took it as such and has argued that, you know, now is the time to de-escalate. But we are, you know, the ceasefire that Trump announced it's far from durable in the sense that it is necessary, but it's not sufficient. What we need now that theoretically Iran has agreed to de-escalate or to start to de-escalate, is we need Iran to come to the table to negotiate a permanent end to its nuclear program, because the Trump administration has always staked its claim on this idea for the Iranian regime that you can have a nuclear program or you can keep your regime, but you can't have both. And so this is still going to be the through line in American policy. And so whether this ceasefire sticks, whether the U.S. gets drawn in more fully, I think remains to be seen. But the ball is squarely in Iran's court.
As you say, President Trump described Iran's retaliation as very weak. But is that underestimating what could come next? I mean, how could this response, or how might this response fit into Tehran's long game?
This is frankly why the United States has been very clear that the goal of the operation, at least for right now, is not regime change, because I think the White House understands that an Iranian regime that feels in danger of being toppled by an external power will act in a very aggressive fashion, right? And there are things that the Iranians can do. They can strike American military targets in the region. They can, interfere with the flow of maritime commerce in the Strait of Hormuz, and they can send oil prices skyrocketing. So the United States has been very clear that they want to do a deal with this regime. However, Trump, you know, sort of in his typical social media fashion, has also said, if this regime can't hammer out a deal, we'll need to find a new one that can. And that's sort of a signal that Trump is prepared to escalate further. And that's a signal for Tehran.
With the U.S. under direct fire and the region on edge, how are America's Gulf allies reacting? Does this test American credibility, or does it deepen its reliance on Israel?
No, I actually think it doesn't test American credibility. It reestablishes American credibility because, charitably speaking, under the last administration, under the administration of President Biden, America was very afraid of any action that could create escalation in the region. And so the American response to things like missile strikes by the Houthis in the Red Sea against commercial vessels or Iran's provocations in places like Iraq really went sort of unchallenged, went uncontested. What you have now is the Trump administration, at least for the moment, reestablishing the coercive part of coercive diplomacy, really showing that, you know, the United States is committed to to shaping events in the region. It's not afraid to get its hands dirty. I think that's an enormously encouraging sign for countries in the region that under the last administration had been forced to hammer out some sort of modus vivendi with Iran, right? I mean, if you can sort of think about the Saudi-Iranian deal that they hammered out in 2023, that was all a function of, you know, we have to make peace with the Iranians because we're not getting protected from their predation. Mm. And so, you know, we want to focus on other things. I think, you know, for countries in the region, and it's early days yet, so we have to wait and see. But I think for countries in the region who have been watching this very, very closely and, you know, in fears that they're going to get swept up in this conflict, they can also see this sort of light at the end of the tunnel where, you know, there's a potential, you know, greater opportunity ahead now that Iran's been cut down to size.
Let's talk China. How is Beijing positioning itself during this war? Is it quietly exploiting the chaos to expand its influence or to test U.S. resolve globally?
Well, this is a really interesting question. And it's not just China, right? It's also Russia, because here in Washington, the conversation in recent months have been, you know, this growing awareness, growing realization of this axis that was forming, strategic axis between Moscow and Beijing and Tehran. And the way both China and Russia have behaved or have not behaved during this conflict, I think, is very telling, right? China has collaborated in terms of political coordination, has, you know, provided a little bit of technical assistance. The Russians have done even less. They've, you know, they've said all the right things, but they're not really doing anything of substance to help the Iranians.
Correct.
And so I think this was really, for the Iranians, a chastening moment in the sense that they thought that they were building this anti-American axis. And when push came to shove, the axis has proven less durable and more vulnerable than, you know, than everybody imagined. And the question to me now is, okay, we've now tested the limits of this alignment. How do we sort of proceed further? How do we pick it apart? How do we emphasize the fissures between the two? Is it possible to, you know, to expand distrust between all these countries? Because a disaggregated Russia, China, Iran axis is better for the world.
Ilan, looking ahead, could this conflict spiral into a direct U.S.-Iran confrontation? And if yes, does America have the political and military appetite for another Middle East war?
I think it certainly could. But I don't know that that's likely, at least not right now. And that's why the president has been, you know, sort of reacting very forcefully to, you know, perceived violations of the ceasefire, to potential snags in the type of peace that he's trying to establish. If this really spins out into, you know, a new phase of the conflict, if the ceasefire doesn't stick, then the United States will, I think, get involved directly. But the impetus is still going to be the same. The Trump administration has no appetite for a protracted conflict in the Middle East. And it knows that it begins losing in it, with its political base the longer the conflict drags on. That means that if the United States has to get involved more fully, it's going to do so with overwhelming force, and it's going to do so quickly, because the most important priority for the White House right now is for the conflict to end as soon as possible.